are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock back again on this Tuesday episode with you. It is your show. It is a mailbag episode. We're going to get into some Twitter questions, some email questions, looking back at the Cardinals game, look ahead to the Packers this Sunday, primetime matchup in Week 12, which is massive, and then really back-to-back massive games on the road to Baltimore and then New Orleans in the 2 weeks following. So a huge stretch of games right now coming up for the 49ers and will really shape what the playoff picture looks like in the NFL. Most of these questions coming on Twitter. You can find me at BD Peacock. Some emails as well. LockedOn49ers at Gmail. Go to LockedOn49ers.com. You can subscribe to this show on all of your favorite podcast apps, just like all of the programs here on the network, including Locked On NFL, also co-hosted by yours truly, along with former NFL scout Matt Williamson. We will kick this off with Michael, who noticed that the Cardinals were constantly double-teaming or chipping Nick Bosa on every snap. Anything that Saleh can do in the future to help get Bosa some one-on-one plays? Yeah, I noticed that too. Nick Bosa was getting doubled a lot, and I think we've seen some things the last few weeks that a lot of teams around the league are going to try to do. And it was effective that the Cardinals were trying to force, and the Seahawks the week before that, trying to force the 49ers to go into pass mode and stop the run first and make the 49ers sort of one-handed and put the game in Jimmy Garoppolo's hand. He took the team down, gave an opportunity to win the game with a field goal against the Seahawks. They did not make it. They lost that game. It worked for about a quarter and a half against the 49ers. They sort of abandoned the run and started using the short pass as sort of an extension of the run, which I think was a genius move on Kyle Shanahan's part. That's why I gave Shanny a game ball on yesterday's program. And then Jimmy Garoppolo went off for 420-something yards, basically, in 2.5 quarters and drove the team down for a game-winning score. So the 49ers learning to win in different ways, which I think is important when things get more difficult down the stretch and into the playoffs, which they're about to do in Week 12 here against the Green Bay Packers. Should be a heck of a lot of fun to watch. And if the 49ers can get that ground game going again to go with now Emmanuel Sanders, hopefully healthy, George Kittle. I mean, Sanders is probably not going to be completely healthy for a while now with those ribs, but gutting it out, and hopefully he can continue to do that and help the 49ers out. The development of Deebo Samuel helps a ton in the passing game. And, of course, getting George Kittle back will be massive for both the pass and the run for the 49ers. But that's on offense. On the defensive side of the ball, we're seeing the thing that teams are doing to answer your question is, yeah, they are chipping, they're doubling Nick Bosa. That's with DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead and Dee Ford, all on that same defensive line. Teams are choosing to double Nick Bosa. That tells you how good he's been as a rookie. What can Saleh do in the future to help get Bosa some one-on-one plays, Michael wants to know. And I think we've seen a little bit of it, but the 49ers could do a ton more of moving Nick Bosa around, letting him rush from the inside a little bit, let him rush from the left. He's been mostly on the right side as a pass rusher. It's the side he likes to rush from, and Dee Ford likes to rush from the left, so I think that's why they leave him out there on those respective sides. But if you start moving Nick Bosa around, then it'll be more difficult for a team to know where he's going to be and be able to double him. So that's the easy answer there, and I would expect Robert Saleh to start doing that a little bit more. It would make a ton of sense, especially with Dee Ford. It looks like he is going to be out this Sunday, according to the most recent reports. So get Bosa some looks on the left side. Get Bosa some looks on the interior. Run some games, some stunts and things like that. And the 49ers mostly want to play fast and easy and violent and all those things that Robert Saleh and Chris Kocurek preaches there. But move them around. Yeah, move them around. Get loose on some of those double teams and give Nick Bosa a shot. He's been shut out in the sack department for the last couple of weeks as a result. But the team is still getting home and the defensive line is still doing well. So here's the other part of it. It's like, okay, we'll go ahead and double Nick Bosa because now Arik Armstead got a sack and Dee Ford got a sack and DeForest Buckner, all three of those other guys got sacks in the last game because they put so much attention on Nick Bosa. So to a certain degree, it's like, yeah, bring it on. Double this guy because we've got these other guys that are still getting home. It does make things easier for offensive coordinators to double a player when they know exactly where he's going to be on every play. So yeah, move Bosa around a little bit. Get him some one-on-ones. Showtime 28 wants to know, do you think Jimmy Garoppolo has done enough to be comeback player of the year? You know, I hadn't thought of that angle, but absolutely. Jimmy Garoppolo going down with a torn ACL during the third game of the season last year, I think he would firmly be among the players considered for comeback player of the year this year, and I can't think of a guy who was out for any number of reasons last year for most or all of the season that is having a better year this season than Jimmy Garoppolo, especially with all the wins piling up for the 49ers. A couple of big weeks recently statistically will help. I'm blanking. Maybe you guys out there can think of a player that would be in consideration more than Jimmy Garoppolo, but it's almost to me, I'm sure there's somebody I'm completely forgetting, but it seems like he's a runaway candidate for comeback player of the year, right? Sean responded with not so much a question, but a statement. He says, I'm tired after the last two games. I think the 49ers fans and players are with you. That team was tired Sunday, and it showed early. They were able to fight through it and dug deep and found something and found a way to win that game. But that's what's rough about having such an early bye. So you have an early bye, and then maybe you're well-rested in week 4, 5, 6, and then all of a sudden you have a short week, and then Monday Night Football, a grueling 70-minute game that goes 5 full quarters, and then a short week again. They got to be exhausted. And I wonder if Kyle Shanahan's going to try to take things somewhat easy. They had an easy week in practice last week, a lot of walkthroughs and things. You know they want to have some real practices to get ready for the Packers, but they also need some time to rest and be fresh for this game and a Packers team that's coming off a bye to face the 49ers. So they will be super well rested. And teams don't always play their best coming off a bye. You would think that they'd be well rested and have an extra week to prepare for an opponent, but a lot of times it doesn't happen that way. So it's not a given that they'll just come out and be super fresh. But the way the 49ers looked early in that game, they were exhausted, and the fan base is exhausted too with the run recently the 49ers have gone through. And you think you're tired now, wait till you go through the next three games and the ups and downs and the competitiveness that will be happening in weeks 12, 13, and 14 with the Packers, the Ravens, and the Saints. More tweets, more emails, some really good questions coming up. Long day at work, still stuck at the office, open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. Are you losing sleep at night over your unfiled tax returns or the large amount you owe the IRS or any other state tax agency? Does it feel like you're trapped and that these tax problems will never go away? Are you worried the IRS will garnish your bank account or your wages? Do you want to be free and put these tax problems behind you? Greg's Tax Service is your local tax resolution specialist. Greg's Tax Service has been in the business for over 25 years and is passionate about helping their clients resolve their tax issues and to get them all the deductions and credits they're entitled to when preparing their tax returns. Call or text Greg's Tax Service at 925-778-4871 to set up an appointment to find out the best options available to free you from your tax problems. Again, that's 925-778-4871. Call or text to set up an appointment. And if you qualify, they can help you settle with the IRS for less than the full amount you owe. Remember, Greg's Tax Service for all your tax needs. Greg's Tax Service is your local tax advocate, standing up and defending the rights of taxpayers. Find him online at gregstaxservice.com. Niner Empire member 49 has a question about the cornerback conundrum for the 49ers. What should happen at right corner? Eman has been playing really well, but Akello was playing equally at a high level before injury. It's a good question, and I think Kyle Shanahan has completely answered it, and judging by the way they were used Sunday, I think we know exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be Emmanuel Mosley is going to be the starter at right cornerback until Akello Witherspoon is completely 100% and has a full week of practice. It was mostly walkthroughs, as I mentioned earlier, last week leading up. So now that he's gotten on the field, when Emmanuel Mosley left the game, Akello Witherspoon came back in. Shanahan says it's Akello's job, and I agree. I understand how you wouldn't want to let a player lose their job because they were injured, as good as Emmanuel Mosley has played. And the other thing is, Mosley is more versatile as far as the positions he's played in camp and throughout his last couple of years with the 49ers. Akello Witherspoon's been all at right cornerback for the last 2 years completely, and that's it. And Emmanuel Mosley's played left corner, right corner, he's played in the slot, so he's, I think, better suited to be your backup between the two players because he can do so much. And we saw Kaywan Williams leave the game last week, getting dinged up, so they might need to use Emmanuel Mosley sooner rather than later as, you know, a key piece playing for some other injured players when Akello is back in 100% and starting again at right cornerback, because that is the way this thing is headed. Now, I wonder if Akello will have somewhat of a short leash. Let's say Witherspoon gets put out there, maybe doesn't look quite right. Will they yank him again and put Mosley right back out there? Or if he gets toasted a couple times early? We'll see. But it's Akello's job when he's 100%. He wasn't 100% yet last week, but he was still active and got on the field. He's making headway and progress there, and it might be this Sunday where he does get that start over Emmanuel Mosley. As good as Mosley's played, I understand the thought process behind putting Akello back out there. And Akello hasn't done anything wrong or bad to lose his starting job. He just got hurt. To the emails, this is Mike. He says, "Hey, Brian, you were saying last week what all of us Niner fans were thinking. Give Richie James a shot. After that loss, where our receivers dropped 108 yards worth of passes, how could you not? Week 11, what happens when the Niners need a big play? Richie James for 57 yards. Boom, what a play. I want to see Shanahan dial up many more plays for Richie. I want to see him used as our number three receiver. I want to see the ball in his hands. Can we talk about this?" Yes, we can talk about this, Mike. And I did talk about it quite a bit last week and then yesterday after the game. It was the only ball that was put into Richie James' hands on offense, and I thought that was a mistake. He needs to see the ball more. I am with you 100% on that. He's a playmaker. Get the ball in his hands. I don't think he's, you know, going to light the league on fire and become the next Emmanuel Sanders or the next Antonio Brown, and those are two of the players that he gets compared to because of his stature. And who knows? Maybe he could become a player like that, but with the way that Pettis has played, and Pettis is firmly in the doghouse. He was on the field, I think, for a one snap, zero targets, zero catches last week. He might be inactive and a healthy scratch at some point, the way things are going, if they have more healthy players and they don't need to have all those wide receivers active. But Richie James deserves a look. He's done nothing but make plays when he's gotten a chance. It's only six receptions he's had this year, but he's averaging over 27 yards per catch on those receptions. Put him out there. Let's see him run the real route tree. That was a screen pass. He's not just a gadget player. The dude is a wide receiver. He can make catches down the field. He can take short catches and make plays on the run. After the catch, he can get downfield. He's got some speed. get the ball in Richie James' hands. I would absolutely use him as the number three as well, behind Sanders and behind Debo. Bourne had the touchdown last week, and Bourne is definitely the guy that Shanahan likes to be the number three wide receiver right now for the 49ers. But Richie James definitely deserves a chance, even if he's not starting over somebody. Just a package of plays that are designed for him and not just the one and done like we saw last week. Mike goes on to say, all right, Mike, the first point was strong. I'll let you go with number two. Can we also talk about the strides that Debo is making? During the draft, I cannot believe DK was available and that we took Debo instead. But now after seeing the style that he plays and the catches he makes, I would take Debo every time. Pure beast. Debo's development has been awesome and timely. And part of it is that he's been targeted. If Kittle and Emmanuel Sanders haven't gotten hurt, I don't think Debo Samuel gets targeted 10 times in each of the last 2 weeks. But the fact that he showed he could do something with those 10 targets and playing big at times, and he's got, I don't remember what exactly the number is. I think it's something like 7.5 yards per catch. Averaging 7.5 yards per catch after the catch right now, which is crazy. I think overall 16.5 yards per catch for Debo Samuel. So he's making plays after the catch. He's snatching the ball out of the air down the field. A couple of drops here and there, which you would like to see him clean up. But as far as rookie wide receivers go, yeah, Debo Samuel's doing big things. And DK Metcalf's doing big things over there in Seattle. 49ers couldn't go wrong with those two players. But it looks like they got themselves a good one, and love seeing the development right now from Debo Samuel. And they might have to lean on him a lot as he continues to develop down the stretch here. And looking at rookie wide receiver statistics so far in 2019, with the 16 catches and nearly 250 yards of receiving the last 2 weeks for Debo, he's actually overtaken DK Metcalf and Terry McLaurin for receptions to lead all rookie wide receivers, or all rookies total in catches, with 38 receptions. Both McLaurin and Metcalf have 35 catches on the year. And receiving yards, McLaurin and Metcalf are both averaging more yards per catch. So Debo is still up there. He's number four overall with 473 yards receiving. He's averaging 12.4 yards per catch. I think it was 16.5 last week per catch for Debo Samuel. DK still number one with receiving yards, 595. McLaurin has 566. And third place is Marquise Brown of the Ravens, who's a big play machine. He's got 477 receiving yards. Debo only has the one touchdown, though. He does have one rushing touchdown, though, as well. An email here from Ron, who asks, why is George Kittle up in the box rather than being on the field with the team? I don't ever recall seeing an injured player not on the field with the team. I believe Shanahan did address this one, and it makes sense. It kind of depends on the injury. If it's a lower body injury, a leg injury, or say a back injury, Jalen Hurd also in the box with George Kittle, you don't want him standing for 3+ hours on the sideline. I mean, that could just hurt them, or, you know, it should be painful, uncomfortable, and it doesn't help them if they're sitting on the bench and can't see anything, and, you know, it's... So it makes perfect sense to me that someone who's got a leg injury, like George Kittle, dealing with both knee and ankle injuries, that you'd want him in the box. Now, George Kittle's a tough guy to get to sit there in the box and not jump up and down and be on his feet the whole game anyway. But that's the idea of it. Someone with a leg injury, you don't want him standing for 3 hours on that injury. You want him taking it easy up in the box. Okay, let's finish up strong. We've still got a bunch of good questions to get to here on the Locked On 49ers mailbag. This episode is brought to you in part by Greg's Tax Service. Honest and straightforward, Greg's Tax Service has been in the business for 25 years. They can help with any number of tax problems, including unfiled returns, back taxes, IRS collection, and audit representation. Find out more at gregstaxservice.com. Let's stick with emails and go to Abe, who says, shout out for taking my last question a few weeks ago on the pod. I made all my friends listen. Thanks, Abe. I appreciate you spreading the Locked On 49ers word. And if you give me a good question, I'll kick it out there. So that's not so much for me taking your question. That's you forcing me to field a good question, right? Through the first half of the season, the Niners' offensive identity was run first, then run again. How many total run yards over the last 3 weeks? Are we still a run-first team? What have teams done to shut it down? And what have the Niners done about it? What can the Niners do about it? Thanks for the questions, Abe. And one thing that's obviously happened is teams are focusing on stopping the 49ers run. That's their number one priority for teams that the 49ers are going up against. And I have a feeling that's not going to change. Some teams are just better against the run than others anyway. When it comes to, and I think it was something like, and the 49ers just sort of abandoned the run. I think they ran it 19 times and maybe half of those runs or so. There was an 8-man box, and so, you know, just stack the box, have more players close to the line of scrimmage, and try to plug up all those gaps. When it comes to the wide zone that the 49ers run, you want to get people on the move. You know, the movement creates a space and you know, creates gaps for the runner to find that cutback lane and hit it. And so not only throwing people in there jams things up, but also just being sound and being able to plug up all of those cutback lanes. And teams have done a good job of that the last few weeks. But the last 3 weeks has been the same. You know, it's only been two teams. It's been the Seattle Seahawks, who have played the 49ers a lot. And it's been the Cardinals, who, you know, it's a new coaching staff, but the Cardinals have also played the 49ers a lot, right? They play twice a year. So some familiar foes. I think that's part of it with the Seahawks. And then with the Cardinals, they just saw them on Thursday. So they know what the scheme is. They can play sound and they can throw more people at it and make it a priority to stop the run. And I think that's all we're seeing right now with the 49ers. And we haven't seen those quick strike runs where it's like maybe you only get 1 or 2 yards on first down, but on second down you get 11. And those big runs haven't been happening for the 49ers the last few weeks. Getting George Kittle back, I think, will be a huge boost, not only because he's a really good blocker and a huge upgrade as a blocker over Ross Dwelly, but it also opens up everything because they have to respect him as a pass catcher, and you can't just ignore him by putting everybody in the box and let him run by you and make big plays in the passing game. So I think that'll help tremendously for multiple reasons getting George Kittle back. And what was it? Carolina Panthers, they had 230 plus rushing yards. I think it was 232 rushing yards in week 6, and then so it's just two teams, the Cards and Seattle, familiar foes. You play multiple times per year, did a pretty good job against the run against the 49ers and absolutely made it a focus. And I have a feeling the 49ers are going to break out at some point here and start running the ball a little bit better, which helps everything. And, you know, and they still ran a ton of play action passing and were super successful with the play action passing in the last game, even though they're still not running the ball all that well. But you know, it's easier to throw the ball when you have fewer players in coverage. Francesco wonders if the 49ers maybe peaked too soon this year. Did they peak too early in the season? That's an interesting question. And he also talks about, you know, the angle of them being tired overall as well. And I think those are two separate things. I talked about them potentially being tired and maybe worn out over the stretch of the last three games, and they have a good reason to. One bonus, though, is that the 49ers haven't had to take a road trip in November. So until December 1st against the Baltimore Ravens, the 49ers have been home for an entire month from Halloween until December 1st, which I think will help there. So not a lot of travel to go with it, not a lot of extra travel time and travel days. So that helps for the 49ers, and hopefully they don't start to wear down at the end of the season with such an early week 4 bye. But as far as peaking, it's an interesting question because the 49ers' opponents, obviously, in the first half of the season are easier than the ones that they've got coming up in the second half of the season. And we'll talk a lot about that with Peter Bukowski on tomorrow's show in our crossover with the host of Locked On Packers. And the Niners obviously have Aaron Rodgers coming up this week, and to this point in the season, the 49ers have only played against one quarterback that's in the top half of the league. And that's Russell Wilson, obviously, and Aaron Rodgers is another one of those. And they're going to see a bunch of those guys down the stretch. So with as good as the pass defense has been for the 49ers, it's going to be a true test to go up against Aaron Rodgers. And we've already seen Wilson once. We'll see Russell Wilson again. We'll see Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Lamar Jackson. So that's going to be fun to watch. And if the 49ers pass defense that's been one of the best, if not the best pass defense in the NFL, if they continue that trend against those quarterbacks, then, I mean, just give the 49ers defense all the awards and say goodbye to Robert Saleh, right? Because it's going to start to get a lot more difficult when you consider the teams and the quarterbacks the 49ers will be facing. So you can call it peaking too early. I just think the schedule has made it so that the 49ers could dominate, you know, for 7 weeks. And now they have an opportunity to prove how good they are. Can they continue to dominate? I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be a much tougher task. And you hope the schedule doesn't make it even more difficult for the 49ers with the early bye and the prime time and then the Thursday and the short weeks. Odd schedule this year for the Niners and could add to the difficulty down the stretch. Let's go back to Twitter and Cronzy, who says 25 or more points conceded in the last three games despite some good D being played. Run game below previous level all three. Correlation? And what's changed? I think absolutely. The 49ers were sort of ball hogs most of the season, dominating in the run game, and their run-to-pass ratio was the highest of any team in the league. So they're running the ball a ton, playing keep away, and when opposing offenses were getting the ball, then the 49ers were destroying them, right? And so I think there's obviously a correlation there between the 49ers running the ball more and the defense holding opponents to fewer points. But the 49ers have had to go in shootout mode a little bit, and they might have to continue to do that. So it's kind of a bonus if the 49ers are able to get the run game going a little bit more later in the season. It's a bonus that the 49ers have proven that they can win multiple ways. They can win through the air. They can win on the ground. They can win almost purely with the power of their defense. They've showed weeks where they could dominate against the run as well. Other weeks, not as good against the run. So it's an interesting team because they haven't put it all together completely and been completely consistent as a team, either on offense or defense, but they've showed the ability to do everything you would want. And if they put that all together at the same time, you might have the best team in football. Speaking of getting the run game going, let's go to Tim, who says Green Bay's run defense is not great, only slightly better than Carolina's at this point. How's the health of the backfield looking going into this game? Does it look like we can get back to running with success early to get off to a better start than the last couple of weeks? Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think Green Bay's run defense has been the thing that's hurt them. They've had a pretty good pass rush. The pass defense has been better than the run defense for Green Bay. I think getting out to an early lead is absolutely key, or at least not getting into a huge early hole like they did last week, 16-0. You don't want to have to try to climb out of that every week. But yeah, the 49ers, this could be the week that the Niners get right on the ground. As far as the injuries go, a bunch of guys are banged up. Looks like Matt Breida might not play. We'll know more about that later in the week, and I'll talk more about the injury report. But it's probably going to be Tevin Coleman, the one, and Raheem Mostert, the two again, if Matt Breida's ankle is not ready to go. And Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson probably get a little bit more run and should be the number three back and active if Matt Breida is out once again Sunday. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to everybody who got those questions in. My apologies if I did not get to you, but we'll hit some more Thursday with Nick on the weekly Wink episode. And tomorrow, 49ers Packers crossover episode with Peter Bukowski of Locked On Packers. And he's really good. That should be a fun show. Talk to you then right here, Locked On 49ers.